Ladies and gentlemen, it is a real pleasure to welcome to the Solari Report two outstanding members of the independent media who are doing great things. You see their videos and content regularly on the Solari Report, but I just love them. I'm a supporter, and I can't say enough good things about them. And that is Melissa and Aaron Dykes. We're going to be talking today about the war for your mind. I think there's no important control technology than mind control, and I don't know a better source that's been deep diving and really showing you about the methodologies and the technologies that that we are facing and dealing with every day in our everyday life. So, Aaron and Melissa, thank you so much for joining us on the Solari Report.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's good to speak to you again, Catherine.
Well, sometimes I feel when I watch your content, I kind of feel like that guy in the Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Who are those guys anyway? So tell us about Aaron and Melissa. Tell us about you, how you started moving into independent media and how you became such a force.
Well, everyone has their own eye-opening journey, but, you know, I got into investigative reporting, working behind the camera, doing website stuff over a decade ago. And as I learned more and more, I got pushed kind of towards the front of the camera, and, you know, people were hearing my reports and everything. And then I met Melissa, and we realized we had a better thing going because we had a lot of questions. And
they weren't getting answered where we were, so...
Yeah.
That kind of, yeah. And I guess for me personally, before I met Aaron, I started realizing that things weren't what they seemed because I was personally getting very sick. In my late 20s, I started getting diagnosed with a lot of different disorders and stuff. And it didn't make sense to me. I thought, I'm only 28. How can I be this sick suddenly? And so my first realization that things are not exactly what they seem actually came from researching our food. And finding out that everything that I thought I knew about the medical system wasn't true, and a lot of things that were told about nutrition aren't true, and I was able to completely heal myself just by changing my diet, and suddenly I had none of these disorders I'd been diagnosed with, and I didn't have to take any of these medications that doctors had been giving me anymore, and I maybe have gone to the doctor once in 5 years now. And so I realized, if that's not true, and all the stuff I've been told all this time is not true about that, what else have I overlooked is taken for granted as being true? It's not. And it turns out it's a lot. It turns out it's a lot of things, and it's a very deep rabbit hole.
One of the videos that we put up in the commentary for this Solari Report is the one you just did. I think you published it on the 17th, called Why I Tell the Truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, you go through the story of, and I think it is true, once you, you know, it's, I sometimes say we're like an operating system and we have 50 databases, and it's very inconvenient to have to change one database in a way that changes the whole operating system. But then what you do, you realize is, oh, you know, a lot of my databases are really not very good.
They're outdated with bad information. Yeah.
Right.
Well, exactly. And people come on our channel sometimes, they say, you're the most depressing channel on YouTube. This is so depressing. But I guess I just don't look at it that way, because I feel like if I'm walking around blindfolded all the time and don't know it, I keep bumping into things and hurting myself, that's depressing. And it makes me feel like a powerless slave in this world. But if I have my eyes open and I have all the available information at my disposal, then I can make better decisions about my own life. So that gives me back some power, you know, whereas just not knowing anything and assuming that everyone, you know, assuming the system that's put in place here is going to tell me everything the way it is, and just believing that, because that's what I was doing, and it was killing me. So I had to take back my own power, and I feel like that's what these videos, I mean, that's what we're trying to do, is just inform people. We're not trying to be the most depressing channel on YouTube. We're just trying to inform people so that they can make better decisions in their life, or at least go into things with their eyes more widely open.
Well, and there's definitely something to be said for blind faith, but stumbling through the dark all the time, at a certain point, you got to know what's going on as much as you can.
Well, but I don't find your channel depressing at all. Because, first of all, your videos are very well done and they're funny. And you draw from a lot of cartoons and movies and other things that just really, you know, it gives you, bam, the insight, but it makes you laugh. And I find them very freeing because suddenly I feel like I'm not alone. You know, there's nothing worse than walking around in this Orwellian world where everybody's saying, oh, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine, everything's just fine. That's right, really depressing. Right?
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, exactly. That's right. Well, I guess I was just trying to reach out to those people who, because that is one of the criticisms that we get, is that it's depressing. But I think that's just a perspective change needs to happen in order for them to understand where I'm coming from. And I guess that's what I was trying to do there. So, yeah, exactly. It's not fine. I don't know how anyone who's even paying, you know, 5% attention could say that everything is fine, actually.
Right. So. Well, the other thing is the way the two of you sort of work off of each other. Because Aaron's like the really grounded, you know, you can just tell this guy is, you can't, you know, you're not going to scare him, but he's really sort of solid and grounded. And then you're like, this is crazy. This is wrong.
And it's exactly like that in our house every single day. Not when there's a camera, not when things are being recorded. I'm all the time coming to him going, look at this, what about this? And he's like, I don't know, you're going to sound nuts. And I'm like, no, I have to do a video on this. We have to explain it to people. And he's like, I don't know about that.
I'm not the naysayer.
He's not the naysayer, but he's my grounding because I'm like five levels above where that's at, and I'm just freaking out and connecting all these things. And he's going, okay, you need to step back and take a deep breath, sweetie. I'm like, no, look at these patents. Oh, my God. So, yeah, it's like that all the time.
Well, you know, it's like that for me. Most of the, you know, anyone who sees this and understands what's really happening here, you know, they go through the same process in their homes. So I find the way you guys balance back and forth, it just says, you know, this is exactly what we're all, you know, I can't tell you how many couples I know who have the same dynamic. Anyway, so we're here to talk about mind control because you, I don't know if you remember this, we did an interview long ago about the Saleri report we did on entrainment technology with Adam Trombley. And I don't know where that was in your interview, you know, sort of in your journey to discover how bad the mind control technology has become. But maybe if you could just start from when you started to realize, oh, there's these different technologies and what your journey has been. How did this evolve?
Well, like I said earlier, I've been looking into things, realizing, oh, more and more of what I thought I knew isn't true. And it was right around the time that we got married that I started looking into MK Ultra, the CIA's clandestine covert mind control program, and really looking into it because I knew generally what everyone had been told about it. You know, they had halfway houses and there was LSD and, you know, they were going to make Manchurian candidates. And everyone knows that and it's been repeated so much. And I thought, I wonder if that's actually what was really going on or not, you know, because that's just what everyone was told. And I think anyone who's looked into that longer than 5 minutes will realize that is absolutely not all that was going on. I don't even think that was the goal of the program at all. And that is really where it started. It was just the question of, well, I wonder what I haven't been told about this, because I know what everyone's been told about it, and I wonder how much that's true. And working backwards.
For my part, I remember when we came to interview you in person, Catherine, and you were talking about the entrainment, and we did another interview with you a couple years later, and that has piqued my interest for all these years, because you've kind of got your stick on it, the story, and the throwing out of your television, and overhearing the executives on Wall Street, and like, finish the story, what else happened, what did they really say behind the room, but it's taken me years to understand what entrainment really is, and why that becomes important.
Well, I'll never forget that because when it happened, it just, you know, I'm not a person who gets scared easily, and I wasn't supposed to overhear that conversation, and it was, you know, they were just talking naturally, you know, entre nous, and when I realized what they were talking about and what it was going to do coming out on TV, I just, you know, I essentially never watched a TV again, is how badly it scared me. So I didn't, you know, when I wouldn't watch it when I went home. Then I got a divorce and lived without a TV, with rare exception. When I was in the administration, I had one. And when I travel, I'll look at it. But, you know, that was it for me and TV. And what's interesting is when I travel around the world, I will ask an audience who's come to listen to me, how many people here own a TV or watch TV? Less than 10% raise their hands. And what I've come to discover is my audience is people who don't watch TV. Now, smartphones are going to change that dynamic. So, sorry, I interrupted you. Keep going.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I was actually going to tell, if you didn't mention that, I was going to say that what you say in your speech is about how less than 10% of your audience watches television. I mean, we don't have cable TV in this house at all. And I think it's interesting because you go to, you know, even a Walmart or something, or you run into a Target store, they got those people walking around with clipboards and they try to get you hooked up onto the cable. And they come up to you and they say, "What, you don't have cable? You don't have it? Oh my God, they can't believe it." It's like you're an alien from another planet because you don't have this in your house. I think, and Spectrum, they call it Spectrum now, just by the way. I think that's very interesting that they now call it Spectrum. But they send us ads probably like 3 times a week. I think someone else's entire bill to Spectrum is going to send us ads because that's how much they want to get everyone onto this system. And is there anything else that's as aggressively advertised and campaigned for as getting people to have cable? Why do they care so much if I have cable TV in my house or not? You know, I don't even think people ever think of it that way. But is there anything else? I mean, I don't think there's anything else that's marketed to me as a person who goes out into the world or gets my mail as much as Spectrum Television, Spectrum TV programming. And there's a reason they call it programming. But we started looking into the MKUltra stuff, and then we have a really great library that we live near because we live by Austin. And so we have a great library. You can go and get books that have been in storage for 5 decades that no one's probably ever checked out ever. And we started looking into the people and the science that came before MKUltra happened and the meetings that these people were having and what they were discussing before World War II even. And so it paints a very different picture of humanity than what you're told. And you start to find things out. Like, for example, you know, everyone knows about a lot of people know about the revelations that came out in the mid-70s with the Church Committee hearings and the Rockefeller Commission, which was headed by Nelson Rockefeller. He was vice president at the time, right? But not everybody knows that if you go back to when MKUltra first started in 1953 and it was signed off on by Alan Dulles, Nelson was also put in place as the first undersecretary of the Health, Education, and Welfare, the newly created administration for that, in 1953, just a few months after MK started. So he was put in a place to directly help sign off on a lot of that, and then he was also put in place at the end to write the final report on it, which conveniently left out the fact that the Rockefeller Foundation, his family, had funded a huge portion of the science they steered and directed towards unlocking behavior and unlocking the mind and trying to figure out all these things. And they were talking about this stuff and working on it a lot during World War II. And so it's interesting because everyone knows the LSD portions of it and that kind of stuff, but no one's really looked much further beyond that because they just assume that's horrible. And they presented everyone with that, and that's horrible enough as it is. But then you start to go back and really look at some of this science, and it's just...
It's really about information. It's interesting you said at the beginning, your focus, of course, used to be finance and economy. And still, a lot of your listener base is especially tuned in because of that. And that will always be important. We know about the big players at the top of the system, whether they be inside the Federal Reserve, inside the Wall Street system, meeting at exclusive meetings like Bilderberg and the Council on Foreign Relations. There was a document that came out a long time ago called Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. I believe it was somewhat disputed. I don't know if it's exactly clear if this was sort of a leak to warn people or if it was a real document. I don't know the story on that part of it. But they made the observation, and I'm reading from it right here, that it was discovered economy obeyed the same laws as electricity. And right. So what that gets into is that data, information, the contents of your mind and your place in society, it's a data loop. It works on a data processing system and a data exchange where data itself, information, almost becomes a substitute for currency. Or maybe currency was originally a substitute for information. I don't know, but
right.
It's very clear now that we have the technology that it's working that way. And why do they even want people watching TV and tune into things in the first place? Well, it's as if we're great spectral energies out of Ghostbusters or something, and they want to get us in that little trap box so we can't cause any trouble
right.
anymore. And if we're tuned into their programs and listening to their words and feeding back on what some newscaster said, well, we're going to be in a very safe, contained place, all of us.
A feedback
all
loop.
All up and down the block in every city. But if we're out there just loose spectral energy, making our own determinations, our own observations, taking direct action in the world, well, that's a different ballgame, and that's one that they can't immediately contain as much. Of course, that was before, but now we all have the cell phones.
One of the things you picked up on, I want to go, just dive back into history a little bit. There was a very important, if you look at the history of mind control, there was an incredibly important step up that happened with the whole Rockefeller Foundation and governmental involvement at the time you just brought up, Melissa. So you had the Freemasons and you had, you know, centuries of this kind of technology working intergenerationally in the secret society. So it's very, very, criminal hypnosis is very old. But then the Nazis in the camps took it to a whole new level. We brought them in on Operation Paperclip, parsed them around at the different universities, and a great amount of money, including the Rockefeller Foundation, was funded in the science. And it was through that process, I believe, that they figured out how to make, you know, if you look at the mind control that they were doing before World War II, it was very expensive on a per-person basis. So,
right.
And a lot of the MK Ultra was very, very expensive. But what they did was they funded and developed the technology and the science to take it across the general population and make it unbelievably economic. And so,
yeah,
if everybody's
absolutely.
Buying and walking around with their smartphone, you can basically, you know, mind control everybody at unbelievably low cost.
Well, and I think where this actually started to become really, where they came up with all of the layout, I think, for what was going to happen in the MK Ultra program, or a large portion of it, actually happened at meetings that began in 1942, known as the cybernetics meetings. I think if you ask the average person about cybernetics, they probably are going to think cyberspace, but they're going to not really know exactly what that's about. But they had these meetings, and they weren't called that at first because that term had not become a term. It was not named by until a little bit later by Norbert Wiener, who was considered the father of cybernetics. But before that, in 1942, they had a meeting that had to do with cerebral inhibition. That is what they were calling it. And some of the people at this meeting included, really well-known physiologists and neuroscientists and people of the day, but they also had hypnotists there and people like Margaret Mead and Gregory Bateson there who were working with OSS, which was a precursor to the CIA. And so they had this meeting, and they had a series of these meetings. They went on for many years, and part of their record they actually printed, and you can go read it, and you can read, but it wasn't until way later, and they've never printed the first few meetings, so they're probably somewhere, but it's not anywhere public that you're going to be able to find. But if you go back and read what they were talking about in those meetings, it's going to start to sound very familiar. I think there's a reason why people know what cyberspace is as a concept, but they don't understand cybernetics itself or anything like that. But cybernetics, Norbert Wiener,
talking about the feedback mechanism.
Yes.
Well, he had developed, he was in anti-aircraft gunnery during World War II, you know, a genius mathematician who was already, he had his PhD at age 17, and he had figured out a very advanced computerized way of tracking where the planes were going to be so they could target them with the guns. But it didn't take very long to realize, well, if you can control and predict aircraft, you can control and predict anything. And if it's based upon the information coming in and the information going out, that's the whole ball of wax.
And he wrote a book about this, which probably the lay common people at that time, I doubt many people even read it if you weren't in one of these hard sciences, but it was called Cybernetics or Control and Communication in the Animal and the Machine.
Wow.
And these guys were looking at human beings as machines. And if you are a machine, can you be programmed like one? And that's what they were talking about with this. Cerebral inhibition and feedback loops, and can you turn someone on and off like a light switch, basically? And that is what they were talking about all the way back in 42. And it's interesting because these people, they all coincide with other people high up the chain in the Rockefeller crew talking about things like, well, what kind of man do we want to create for the new world that's coming after this war is over? You know, now that we have a world with the atomic bomb, it's so scary, and an atomic annihilation could possibly happen at any moment. So we have to ensure peace. We have to ensure that, and we have to help create the new world man. And so this is all coinciding together in the lead up to 1953 when MKUltra gets signed off on. And admittedly, those documents that came out are boilerplates. If you see the ones that were actually leaked, it was the financial information that came out, and then you can glean information from that. But admittedly, they didn't spell out in there anything that they were doing. And there was a report that even came out in 63 by the CIA where they said only two people who even work at this entire agency know what the real aim of this project is.
Right.
But you can find a lot more information about the drugs and the prostitution and the LSD than you could ever find about cybernetics. But what we do know, and it's been gleaned from different reports that have come out, and there's a few declassified documents, although not declassified until last decade, so all this time, that will actually mention cybernetics. They mention world cybernetics, but that's the parts that if you get the documents about, say, the history of the Office of Science and Technology and stuff like that in the CIA, the part on cybernetics is redacted. You don't get to know what that is. Even today, you don't get to know about what they were doing with that. So you can know all day about prostitutes and LSD, but you don't get to know what they were doing with this technology or what they were working on or what their actual goal was.
And yet, it's very clear from looking at it, long before Ray Kurzweil and these others, this was literally the birth of AI, literally the birth of robotics, literally the birth of practical mind control, especially using technology and not just hypnotism methods, which was kind of the stepping stone. I mean, it's important, but
and if you read between, you have to really dig. You have to go into congressional testimonies that were coming out in these hearings in the 70s, where they'll barely mention for 2 seconds, oh yeah, we were looking into radar, and if we beam that at someone's head, will they do something that we want them to do? But they will talk about that for 2 seconds. And in 77, when Stansfield Turner was put in charge of the CIA, and he had to go be at these last, because they found new documents and there were a few more hearings, the one thing that he ended up saying was, the CIA is no longer wittingly or unwittingly testing drugs on anyone. Drugs. And that was, and he said it like 3-4 times. Didn't say anything else, though, that they were testing. Didn't mention any of the other technologies that were being tested that had nothing whatsoever to do with drugs or pharmaceuticals at all. And since that time period, and there's a lot of other things that have happened, but meanwhile, all of the stuff that has to do with things like how electromagnetic energy, for example, affects you and stuff like that, they just keep saying, well, non-ionizing radiation is not harmful unless it has a heating effect. You're fine. It's no big deal. Put a cell phone right next to your head, whatever. And that's it. And all of the major studies that tell you about the health and effects and things like that, most of the ones that are upheld are the ones that are funded by government sources or military sources or industry sources that are connected with that. And they just keep saying everything's fine. But meanwhile, in the background, in the Soviet Union, for example, they've long known that these
right.
kinds of frequencies have an effect on your nervous system. They have an effect on your every system, really, but they have some very interesting nervous system effects and other things like that. And none of that's ever really been made known to the public in a widespread way. And when they do talk about stuff like that, it's mainly to say that science wasn't really scientifically valid because the Soviet Union didn't follow the American scientific process, so therefore there's no merit to it. And they just kind of sweep all that under the rug, and they don't really discuss it at all. Meanwhile, I mean, here and there you have little bits of information coming out from independent sources and other people where they say things like, you know, they're putting whole towns to sleep by the 70s, you know, and stuff that's
right.
not been declassified or it's just now been declassified, I mean, recently. So there's a huge gap between what the average person knows about this stuff and what has been known for a very long time, from what I can tell.
Well, one of the other things the Rockefeller Foundation Network, or the Rockefeller sort of cartel engineered using government, was basically they created a federal credit mechanism that could spend, had an open checkbook to spend money on universities, private universities and private corporations doing whatever research or applied technology that they wanted. So when you take very powerful new technology and you integrate it with an infinite amount of money that can be spent and unpacked in a way that, you know, most of the people working on it don't see the big picture, as you're saying. You know, you're talking about an incredible machinery, and that machinery has been rolling. You know, they started the black budget in 47, 49, but that they got in the early 80s the ability to basically spend it infinitely on universities and corporations doing highly classified work that until then had been government employees, and you're just completely off to the races. I don't know if you guys have read The Devil's Chessboard by David Talbot, but I believe that he has absolutely nailed the story of the Kennedy assassination. He basically, you know, you have to go through the whole book, but he basically, in my mind, proves that Alan Dulles was the project manager reporting up to the Rockefellers. And what's interesting is when you unpack the whole sort of process of what Dulles was doing and who he was working with, you know, essentially the assassination of the president is a coup, and what they are doing and spending a fortune on to make sure that that coup sticks is mind control.
That's a big can of worms you opened.
Yeah.
John Foster was married into the Rockefeller family, and the Dulles brothers were extremely involved. And see,
right.
I could talk about that for hours.
He worked high up on their foundation for 16 years before he was, Secretary of State? So
it's interesting, just by the way, because you mentioned the Rockefellers having an electronic checkbook, and I just so have happened to watch a documentary, you know, one of those newsreels on ARPANET and how it was set up and what they did. And after they had the universities who set up ARPANET, which of course became the Internet, which was military-backed from the beginning, the first thing they did outside of academia was set up a network for the Federal Reserve banks so they could shuttle their funds back and forth, you know, between the branches and to all the banks that they were doing business with. That was the first thing they did with the Internet. So
I mean, they claim that it was for talking about sharing information having to do with atomic particles and all this stuff, but when you look, that's not actually what they really did with
they
it.
They rolled out in 1972, you know, the plastic card you're going to carry in your wallet, a really weird, cheesy game show version of the ATM machine you're going to be putting your money into, and so forth and so on. So yeah, it goes way back. And as far as the Rockefeller funding itself, you'll find it especially all over science. There's really no start date except for the foundation itself, but it really picked up steam in the 20s with people like Wilder Penfield, who was on the cutting edge of open brain surgery. He was directly putting electrodes on the surface of the cortex. Right. He was getting behavioral responses. And guys like that were heavily Rockefeller funded. They poured out millions of dollars in 1920s and 1930s money to build brand new institutions, and they put them in places where they could get around the ethics laws, you know, because they set up Wilder Penfield, who was an American. They sent him up in Canada. Why? Because there's no medical ethics laws preventing him from doing human experimentation. He was in New York.
Right.
That's where he met the Rockefellers. He was already at the New York Psychiatric Institute, and they moved him for that reason. But the larger story is that the interwar years after World War I was over, we know about the larger objectives they had. They were already moving into that phase in the 30s when you know, nationally they set up the National Research Council and related bodies. But privately, you had the Macy's Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundations, putting together the Psychosomatic Journal and other groups who were just very key integral players, the same people over and over, and the people they tutored and studied under, they became the people of the next generation and so forth. It's a continuing network completely of these people,
right,
whose fingerprints are all over MKUltra, all over secret research during and after the war, and these are the people, and they're completely Rockefeller funded.
I have to just warn you, as a matter of material disclosure, my grandfather was Dean of Social Sciences at the Rockefeller Foundation, and but he got run out. He got fired by the Dulles brothers because he was promoting decentralization. So he came out okay in the end.
Well, that's good, because, so here's what I think is well, I've got two things. There's one thing that I wanted to just read, and this is from Robert Becker from his work, The Body Electric, which is a book he put out in 85. This is where a lot of this technology had progressed to the point where you had doctors writing stuff like this in books. He says, "Eventual monitoring of evoked potentials from the EEG combined with radio frequency and microwave broadcasts designed to produce specific thoughts or moods, such as compliance and complacency, promises a method of mind control that poses immense danger to all societies, tyranny without terror," he says. Scientists involved in EEG research all say the ability is still years away, but for all we could sense of it, it could be happening right now. Conspiracy theories aside, the hypnotic familiarity of TV and radio, combined with biological effects of their broadcast beams, may already constitute a similar force for mass standardization, whether by design or not. His whole book is about the effects of electricity and electromagnetic frequencies on animals and humans and how that affects people. And he goes through this whole book talking about all the ways this could be used for good, but then he gets to the end and has to admit that it also affects people in all kinds of ways. It can make you sleepy, it can make you angry, I mean, all this stuff. He goes through and talks about this stuff. But he's saying, eventually, monitoring of evoked potentials from your EEG combined with a radio frequency or microwave broadcast producing specific thoughts or moods could be used to affect everyone. And when you read something, and that's 1985, that's pre-cell phones, that's pre-microwave towers on every street corner. And when you read it then and you look around today, you're thinking, wow, that is really horrifying thought. It makes me feel like I live in They Live or something. But what's interesting is that today, we do. I believe that, actually. Today they're just openly calling it the Brain Initiative. And, and Obama announced it, in 2014, and they said, we're going to give $1 billion, right? But just like back in the 50s, just like with it, because MKUltra, that was covert, and people didn't realize how extensively Rockefeller Foundation was controlling that. Today, it's called the Brain Initiative. Obama says we're going to give them $1 billion, and it's being co-directed, all the planning is being co-directed by a neuroscientist from the Rockefeller University. And it's all in the open, because now they know that no one's paying attention. But DARPA is talking about putting EEG readers in every classroom in America that can be hooked to an iPad so that kids can download their brainwaves onto an iPad, because it's going to help them understand science or something like that. It doesn't even make sense, the explanation that DARPA is giving for why they want to make an EEG reader in every classroom in America. But this is the kind of stuff they're pushing for. And I just don't think people, we forget things so fast. Everything's happening so fast as technology speeds up. But so this is why you have to go back and you have to look at history, because the whole point of history is so that we don't repeat the past. But if you look at what they were accomplishing and working on and trying to do during MKUltra, and you look at this, what's going on today, this brain initiative is being promoted on the cover of MIT Technology Review from July and August 2014, like right after it was announced. And they just literally say on the cover, hacking the soul. New technologies that look inside the mind will make it possible to change what we think, feel, and remember. And the World Economic Forum, Davos, they had people hear about that and they go, oh, it's just a bunch of stuffy elite people getting together in conference rooms talking about, you know, economics or whatever. No, this in 2015, they had panel after panel about things like, what if your brain confesses, where these people sit around in a group and laugh it up about how they got these new technologies now where they're going to be able to decode your subconscious thoughts remotely without your, you won't even know they're doing it, and that, and what that implication is going to mean to everyone. And they're saying things like, do we have a right to mental privacy? Do we have a right to freedom of thought? This is a new thing that's been really widely promoted in Scientific American and things like this. They're pushing this idea that there's no such thing as a legal setting for freedom of thought, even though your speech, we have freedom of speech, that comes from your thoughts. That's what that's where freedom of speech originates, is in your thoughts. But they're claiming there's a distinct difference here now. And so this whole push is happening right now while you have people like Regina Dugan, for example, who worked at DARPA, then she worked at Google, then she just got done working at Facebook's top secret Building 8 project, which she announced this year. They're going to create a device that Facebook users wear on their heads that decodes their thoughts so that they can type from their mind directly into it. I mean, it sounds like science fiction when I say it.
But they promise they're not going to... They're not going to do non-consensual.
Right. This is what they claim. Right. They claim that they're only going to look at the thoughts that you want to share, but like the NSA
we have
only
your,
wants to
your
look
new
at the
video
phone calls
about,
you want to share.
We have your new video about this in the commentary as well. It's excellent. I can't recommend it highly enough. I just want to give you a little financial fraud factoid that you may want to take a look in. When I first discovered the sort of fundamental nature of the Madoff fraud, Madoff from the early 90s only had one bank account for his investment advisory business at J.P. Morgan Chase, and the money went in and it never went out to buy securities. So J.P. Morgan Chase knew the whole time and was effecting intentionally illegal transactions. It knew it, and it, you know, it did nothing. So, you know, in one sense, Madoff was the junior partner, not the senior partner. But the money went, one of the places the money went was to the Picower family. It was one of the big families that received a lot of the money that sort of shot through the Ponzi scheme. And so I tried to discern where they had sent the money. And one of the places was the Mind Initiative at MIT. A lot of money.
Yeah, well, they're a defense front in many respects, too. Of course, they've got pretty deep relationships, both overt and covert, with the defense structure, the CIA, you name it. So,
and they've been part of the MKUltra. I mean, those people have been part of the cybernetics ever since the very beginning. So it makes sense. It does. What I don't think people understand, first of all, and it's because they've purposefully not been made to understand it, is how advanced the technology has now gotten, how widespread, and like you said, how cheap. I mean, they're sitting up on stage now and they're telling people anything that's in your current conscious awareness can be decoded. They can decode how you felt about the last movie you watched. I mean, that kind of stuff. And they're openly saying now that, do we have a right to cognitive liberty? And it's like they've created this phrase that didn't even exist. Cognitive liberty, that wasn't a phrase that really existed. That's not something people talked about, because it was a given. You know, it was a given that if it's inside my head, that's my brain. Like, that's inside my mind. That's my personal space. It's like George Orwell said in 1984, the few cubic centimeters inside your skull, that's the last place that you have freedom. And now they're saying Well, not really, actually, because technically we don't have freedom of thought. We only have freedom of speech. I mean, we have the Fifth Amendment, right, to not incriminate, but this isn't, I mean, obviously most people aren't criminals. It's just about your privacy at all. And so they're saying, well, do you really have a right to mental privacy? Well, that's up for debate. And so now we have people at the World Economic Forum debating if this exists, when before it wasn't even a question. But the fact that it's becoming a question, I don't think people even realize that. And so it's almost like we're living through basically the same debates and the same things that were going on in the late 60s and early 70s, unbeknownst to the public, in MKUltra and the stuff with psychosurgery. Because back during that time, Ronald Reagan out in California and some of the people in Nixon's administration were talking very heavily about creating centers. They were going to call them violence centers, where they would screen everyone to make sure that you don't have a violent tendencies in a pre-crime style. And they had a lot of technology back then that had been created through a lot of these covert programs to do just that. And I think it just, there was a whole backlash against psychosurgery, and I think a lot of it was forced underground during the 70s when all those revelations came out. But now we just have Davos panels where people sit around on stage and they say things like, well, now we have the technology to decode your subconscious, so we could actually use that on, you know, all the 10-year-olds and find out who's got a propensity to be a psychotic or a psychopath. And then society is going to have to ask some serious questions about how we're going to utilize that. So, I mean, can you imagine if you were a mother and someone came to you and said, we're going to screen your child, you know, using these technologies, which I don't even think they still fully understand exactly how the brain works enough to really do that and to have all these, you know, your brain is very, it's...
I mean, it's just worth pointing out, this has all been sold on a criminal basis. If you're not doing anything wrong, nothing to hide, of course.
Which they just keep repeating like a mantra.
But from a power standpoint, this is the opposite of decentralization. This means you could spy on your competitors. You could seize and shut down scientific inventions before they happen.
You would know how to sell anything to anyone because you can see how that last commercial for Pepsi made them feel.
And
I mean,
control the narrative. It's just huge.
Once that's all integrated, can you imagine? I can't even imagine, honestly.
I think the reason they're pushing for a constitutional convention is once you get inside, you can then change the process and tear it up. And whether
you can do all kinds of anything else, too.
Yeah, so one of their lines is it's very old, it needs to be reinvented for new technology. Well, what it means is they want freedom to do this. And the reality is, as imperfect and unenforced as it is, the Constitution is a huge nightmare for them, and it's standing through, you know, in the way of a lot of these different things. So, you know, I yap about the missing money, but mind control, it's, you tear up the Constitution and then they are just free to rock and roll on all of this stuff in any way they want. I mean, it's amazing how much they're doing now in violation, but then they're totally free. One of the things I wanted to mention, one of the things I really appreciate about your work is you do a lot of deep diving on patents. Maybe if you could just talk a little bit about how extraordinarily illuminating the patent system can be if you're willing to go to the really hard work of going through it and finding what's there.
Yeah, and looking up court cases and all that stuff, it's a big challenge. We did a video on Hendrikus Luz, which really Melissa did more looking into it than I did. But he explains blatantly they can control your nervous system. He explains how to do it.
Right.
And I don't know.
And he was working for DARPA. But if you just go in and type in nervous system, you will see that there's a history of these patents going all the way back to the cybernetics movement. They cite Norbert Wiener a lot for things that he's not actually widely known for. Even the people who do know him, they cite the stuff that never came out. And it's just, there's a long path of this technology, of figuring out exactly what can trigger a person, how to activate an organism is what they call it, activation, you know, what turns on and off your neurons. And if you read these, I mean, you don't have to look much further than just start digging through patents, type in things like nervous system and stuff like that, and you'll see that's just, it spells out basically a breadcrumb trail of 70 plus years of them figuring this out step by step to where we have today now, just this last year, one of the Davos panels was a woman talking about how, well, we've now discovered that if we hook different colored proteins to the neurons in your brain that produce sleep and we flash a light at you, we can make you go to sleep. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that they're saying now, using things like optogenetics and stuff like that. We're going to be able to just turn sleep off and on. What do you think about that, guys? And I just think what's crazy about it is, well, first of all, as far as patents are concerned, those are the patents they actually published. Because there's also patents that when they come out, they are not published for reasons of national security. They're kept secret and they're classified, and the inventors who invent those are threatened with being put in federal prison for 20 years if they even talk about those things. So even just looking at the ones that have been published, though, it's pretty clear that we're affected by these technologies in a very fundamental ways. And there's everything from, you know, just manipulating your nervous system with a regular computer monitor down to, you know, using a simple program on BASIC, which is forever ago, and Windows 95. And it could be done that way, and they can induce moods, they can induce mood changes if you sit. So it's kind of interesting because you tell that story about, you know, I heard this in 84 and I threw my TV out. Well, by the 90s, you have this man, Hendrikus Luz, who had worked for defense contractors going back to the 50s at Douglas Aircraft and stuff like that. And by the 90s, he's contracting with DARPA, he's contracting with Health and Human Services, and he's saying, yeah, and we can also use subliminally pulsed electromagnetic fields from your computer monitor and your TV screen on a DVD, a VHS, a BASIC program, and we can affect your nervous system and it make people sleepy, again, mood changes, all kinds of things. And it's to the point where I've read so much about what these scientists have done and the things that they worked on that there are days when I go to the grocery store and I notice, for example, everyone at the entire grocery store seems like they're in a bad mood, like everyone just stepped in it today. And I start to wonder, is this real? Like, is everyone really in a bad mood all at the same time? Or is there something more to it? You know, and then you start reading, like I said, you know, Dr. Becker, he said back in the 80s they were talking about this, you know, where they said, well, evoked potentials with EEGs coupled with, you know, different things here. I mean, because that's the thing. They were able to take EEG readings, break those down, and then figure out how to spindle or send back frequencies to the spindles to shut down or turn on certain things using radio frequencies, and that was back in the 60s.
Yeah, and to add a little bit about that, this has to do with the entrainment situation, which again is the thing being broadcast, not the entertainment, the entrainment. And I didn't know very much about this technically years ago, but it's the bond. It's not unlike
right.
the mother and child bond. And the
right.
way it works is the brain, neurons by definition, are always on the cusp. They're sitting on the fence. The calcium ion channel is ready to switch at any given moment. It's just the slightest nudge will turn something on and excite it, or turn it off and shut that process down. And it only takes a very weak electrical signal. In fact, that's what works the best, very much like the 60 hertz signal out of the wall, which is a multiple of 10. And what Norbert Wiener in particular found as far back as 1930, he started to literally do the math. We got a human being, we have new technology, including radar dishes and electricity and telephones. Literally, what is the math between them? And he found a harmonic analysis that is nonlinear, that is the basis for this entire system. But he put together the emerging information about EEGs, and the alpha state of the brain is at around 10 hertz, which just so happens to be the key ELF wave signal that the Navy uses, that submarines use. It's a derivative, a multiple of the signal from electricity and TV, and this is all related. and it's a scanning. The radar dish goes around anything. Ah, we got something. The brain is the same way, but if you sync the rhythm, if you sync everyone up, you control the timing of that. You control when mental processes happen. And of course, it gets much more technical and exact, but there's a very key process there that I don't think people understand. I didn't understand until recently myself.
Well, we've been, at the Salieri Report, we've been going through and doing book reviews on all the application of essentially mind control technology to create, financial or consumer monopolies. So gambling, financial products, video games, pornography, consumer sales. And from everything I can tell, all these applications are technically illegal, or many of them are technically illegal. You know, and people keep talking about the source of inequality is technology. No, the source of inequality is the ability of some groups to, you know, consistently operate outside the law with impunity. And, you know, but the technology is very much a part, because if you look at the profitability, so we've been talking about mind control technology, but if you look at the immense profits that can be generated by applying that, whether, in various aspects of the economy or financial markets, you know, we're talking in the trillions. It's fantastic.
And again, just the speed of information has changed that by leagues. All the automatic financial trading that goes on, no human could even possibly keep up.
Right. Information is the new oil.
Right.
People don't seem to understand that. And I think we've purposefully been, I mean, I was never taught in public school anything about your brain and the effects of electrical signals and electromagnetic energy or any of that. I don't remember ever hearing about any of that. And I think that's the other issue, is that the public has been purposefully kept in the dark about this stuff for decades and decades and decades, to the point that they don't even know how it would, they don't understand the concept of how it would work. And so it seems like a science fiction, but that's one of the reasons why those patents, I think, are very interesting. And I should probably just put up an article that has just a list of all the ones, because I have a huge stack of them. I just haven't gotten to them all. But the patents, I mean, it shows you exactly how it works with charts and graphs, and it's the science it's based on and everything. It's just they don't widely tell anyone that. And so you have all these people, and they're just using their Facebook, and they're thinking whatever. And the Davos people were basically talking about how, well, people have already shown that they're perfectly willing to give up their privacy for, you know, convenience of this technology. Well, no, they've been socially engineered to do that.
Right.
They've been socially engineered to do it, and they've been told that it's safe and there are no consequences to any of it, and they've not been taught how their own brain functions, and so they have no idea what they're signing on to, actually. You know, Facebook is a giant social experiment.
So here's, I want to get back to what I think is so powerful about TrueStream Media, your videos, what you're doing. You have been uniquely gifted in the way that you help people see the big picture, because there's a lot of detail, and it crosses many different areas, you know, from the governance structure to secret societies to technology to the military to the Italian. You know, it's a lot of ground to cover.
Right.
And yet you have a way. Yeah, you have a way, and it's hard for people to fathom that exists. And you talk about it with the confidence that it deserves. Yes, this really exists. But you do it in a way that connects the dots. And the video is very effective at helping you integrate many different areas without it being overwhelming. And that's why I think the movies and the amusement is so important. But it's just, and that's why I really want to make sure all the Salieri Report subscribers who are listening, I really want you to go to TrueStream Media and start to dive in. We'll put up a series of links of some of the great ones on mind control. But this is something that really helps you integrate. And that's the hardest thing to do when you're trying to fathom this stuff, because the technology is invisible.
Yeah, and that's why we're actually working on a film right now, our first feature-length documentary. And it regards this exact topic. And it has taken us over 2 years now. It's because it's just the two of us. So when the movie comes out, all of the credits, it's going to be by Aaron and Melissa, by Aaron and Melissa. I mean, the whole credits, because we don't have, I mean, we obviously don't have
right.
funding to have a crew and any of that stuff. We do everything. We do the filming and the research and the editing and all of it. And that's why it's taken us so long. But also, I think if it was just such a straightforward thing, we could have just done it like any other video. It turned into a whole documentary, and it's probably going to be, we're trying hard not to go over 3 hours. So is it, that's how big this film is, but that's what
right.
we're trying to do right now, really about the historical stuff. Because I feel like diving into this topic, it's so huge, like you said, and it's so interconnected.
Today is too familiar.
Yeah.
Too familiar.
Today is too familiar, but also you can't get to a place where you can even understand it until you understand the foundations of how it could be possible. You have to go
right.
back and look at history. You have to go back and
right.
look at this stuff. And so that is what we've spent the last 2+ years of our lives doing, digging into all this declassified documents and FOIA requests that we've given and all the stuff that we're trying to do. And hopefully that will help people. That's the way we're hoping to try and help people, is to go back and show the history, so that, because that has not, the film that we're making and the story that we're telling, that has never been told. It's never
right.
been made. We watched every movie, because that's the first thing we did, is like, well, let's go find every movie we can on this topic, and maybe we'll understand it better if we do that. We've watched every single movie, document, all of that. This story has never been made. So
right.
that's what we're trying to do, and hopefully it adds something to at least the discussion, because one of the things that I think is so paramount is that I'm seeing all this stuff repeat right now. We're living in it at this very moment. They're getting ready to turn on 5G. They're going to hook everyone to the Internet of Things. They're talking about putting sensors in your trash can. I mean, it's insane, while on the flip side they're talking about issues of mental privacy and cognitive liberty, and people can't even fathom that far out because they don't have a basis in the science and in the history of how we would even get to a place where that is a question.
Right. So let me ask you, you have gone through a process as two people, both in your lives and in independent media, fathoming how unbelievably out of control this technology is. How have you adjusted in your life? What do you do? How has this knowledge made you more powerful individually as human beings living your life? How has this knowledge protected you?
Well, we've made some personal changes just in our own house. I mean, we got rid of our smart meter, first of all, and we only have one cell phone, but I don't even own a phone. It's actually his phone, and I just borrow it. We don't sleep with it anywhere near our bed at all. We don't sleep with it on, and we don't sleep with it near our, anywhere that we're at. In fact, it stays away from us most of the time. We keep it in a bag that is the EMF shielding bag, actually, the majority of the time. We don't have Wi-Fi in our house at all. Not at all.
Like right. Neither
when
do
we
I.
had the guy come out to, because we have to have internet for the job that we do. But when we had the guy come out to put it in, he's like, "You don't want why?" He was completely shocked. You don't want Wi-Fi, and we ended up having it hardwired. And he said, "I just did
right.
this so I could do it because you're the first person in all the years I've worked at this company that's not gotten Wi-Fi." But we just
right.
won't even have it in our house at all. I mean, that you know,
right.
and so we have tried in our own home to just limit the amount of exposure to this stuff as we can, and our children, obviously, too. I mean, my daughter just now turned 18, and she just now has a cell phone. So, and she thought I was just the craziest person in the world when I said that, but, you know, I feel like after reading all of this stuff and after digging through all this information, I can't willingly do that. I just can't do it. You know, it'd be like pouring toxic chemicals all over your house, except almost worse in a way.
Well, I will say this. One of the most frightening books I've ever read was a book on how to, it's written for parents on how to protect your children from what can happen on Facebook and social media and email. And it's absolutely the most terrifying book I've ever read. But I will also tell you that I've had very dear friends and allies who got an iPhone and stopped being my friend. I just lost them. They became a different human being, and I lost them. And so,
well, and they are openly saying these days in TED Talks and stuff like that, they're openly talking about how, you know, 9 out of 10 people who have a cell phone, it's the first thing they do when they get up. They feel phantom vibrations coming from it all day, that we've gotten so addicted to it. And they talk about it like it's drugs, that we've gotten so addicted to it now that we hallucinate because of it. And I mean, there are people who, you've seen this in public now. Well, you know, when you go out to a restaurant or something, there's people that's the whole time they're on their phone. But even when they put their phone down to the side of them, they have to constantly touch it. They have to constantly touch it. I've seen that repeatedly. This is something a lot more than just a piece of technology. It's become something right. that people keep on themselves more than any other thing that they own. And it's to the point where, I mean, you had all that stuff come out with WikiLeaks where they said, yeah, the CIA is remotely turning these things on. They can turn on cameras. They can turn on microphones. Suddenly they're in your living room.
Right.
You know,
right.
and everyone, they're slowly acclimating everyone to this system, which is basically, it's a panopticon type system where it's the total information awareness system that DARPA, they tried to unleash that on everyone in the last decade, and then people went, whoa, what, that's totally creepy with your weird all-seeing eye logo, you're going to, you know. So that was too far for people, so they dialed that back a little bit. But they're slowly bringing us up to the fact that, yes, once this is all in place, once this smart grid thing is fully in place everywhere, I mean, it's going to be like living in a giant video camera all of the time. I mean, Bilderberg Group has their meetings. They say, does privacy really exist? Because it's a rhetorical question. They know that it doesn't anymore, really.
And they gave an Oscar to that film, We Live in Public, which is kind of, they were just parading the fact that everything is going to be Big Brother. You could be in a game show. You could be in a CIA interrogation. But you'll certainly be on camera. You'll be monitored
everywhere that you go all the time.
And moreover, there's a reassuring relationship, the entrainment again. My dog is only okay for so long until I give him a reassuring pat on the head again. We're
right.
only so long until we touch our phones again. Or
get another text. So they've wired everyone into this, basically.
One of the technologies I'm most concerned about is the Kingsman technology. You know, there's been a movie, you've had the Kingsman movies, but then you've also had John Cusack in The Cell. And, you know, I don't know if you've watched the brawls at Chuck E. Cheese or some of the brawls in the mall. I think it's basically prototyping the Kingsman technology, you know, and they are creating the capacity to weaponize the population.
And by the way, we've studied the specific moment they claim was the first time they initiated violent attack patterns in patients using electrodes and electrical stimulation. They'll leave that for the film. But
yeah,
this technology is pretty frightening.
Yeah, we traced it back to the first person they ever did that in. So
wow.
They've been able to do that since the 60s. They know that they can do that. They were able to use these radio frequency signals to also, I mean, they were able to entrain a monkey to the point where they were able to get the monkey to do a complex sequence of actions, 14 different actions. You know, the monkey stands up, it turns its head to the left, it climbs down a ladder, it attacks another monkey, a specific other monkey, it walks across the room, it does this, this, and this. And so they were able to do that on repeat 20,000 times in a row. And it was the same every single time, on cue, with this technology. And that is back in the early 60s, right? Early 60s or that late 50s?
And the basic mechanism is, you know, a monkey has its instinctual behavior, but this overrides the inhibition. Don't attack the leader. He's too strong. Nope.
Right.
You push this button, it will attack the person at the top. And that top monkey, he lives off of the fear that the others will be submissive after a certain number of beatings or whatever. But if the inhibition is turned off in this monkey, it'll keep attacking, and the head monkey won't understand why it's not, you know, stopping. Said that's when he loses his power, is when the other monkey can't be inhibited anymore.
And I was just going to say really quick, what they also found was that when they use this technology on people, your innate reaction is to explain it away to yourself within your own environment. So they do something, and the person will go, oh, I must have just forgotten, or I must have just whatever. You will explain it away to yourself. That is the other thing they found. So if they were using this technology on someone and they made them, for example, throw something on the floor and break it, they'll go, "Oh, I must have just slipped. It must have been me." Like, you'll try to say that it's yourself.
Right. Right. Exactly. Well, it's hard for people to fathom that this stuff exists. Again, it's invisible. And that somebody would want to do it. Most people would not want to manipulate another human being in this way. And they really have, you know, I'll never forget one of my favorite control stories is that Richard Dolan came to speak at a luncheon that we gave in New York. And he walked in and he'd been working on his book on false flags. And he's doing an incredible job on the whole false flag phenomena. And he walked in and for the first time in my life, he looked a little shaken. And I said, "Richard, how are you?" And he said, "Well, to tell you the truth, I'm a little shaken." I said, "Why is that?" He said, "This research on false flag is kind of, you know, shocking and upsetting. And, but I can't explain to you, you know, I can't really explain to you why." And I said, "Yeah, I know why." I said, you're a chicken who's just been able to envision what it looks like from the farmer's point of view. And now you understand livestock management." And he said, "Yes, that's it. Exactly."
I was just going to say, and so after doing all this research and walking down a sidewalk and seeing every single person with their face buried in their phone, it becomes very horrifying, yeah.
Yeah, it is horrifying. Okay, so let's talk about what's next for you, and particularly, how do we support you? What do you want everybody on this phone call to do? Should we sign up for your YouTube channel? I'm a little worried about YouTube.
Yeah, I am too. I really am too. And we've been trying to look at alternatives lately. We do youtube.com/truestreammedia. We have Patreon on there, and we have been asking people if they will give even $1 a month on there because we've been putting all this money towards funding this film, and that's really like all of our time, everything that we've been doing has been put into trying to make this movie, because I feel like of all the things that we could contribute with the skills that we have, a film on all of this research that we've done in a way that lays everything out so that the average person can understand how we could get to a they live society and can understand it in a basic way would be the best thing that we could contribute to society. And that's all we've been working on all of our free time, all of our weekends. I mean, we work 7 days a week, and that's all we've been doing. So that's what we're doing, and everywhere we are, we're TrueStream Media, and that's pretty much, I mean, that's it. Share the videos, too.
So I just want to make a pitch. I just want to make a pitch, because people always ask me, what can I do? You know, 1,000 people giving $5, $5 a month, that's enough money, or that's $5,000 a month, or 500 people giving $10 a month, or 250 people giving $20 a month, you know, if it consistently rolls in, you know, that can give you a cash flow that can make you very, very powerful. Because if you look at what you're doing now, I can't imagine what would happen if you had a steady stream of income. So let alone one to build a crew. So 2,000 people at $10, you know, you're starting to really get in the game. So, I just think this is incredible media. I think it's going at the topic, which is the topic we have to break through if we want solutions on every front you can think of. This is, you know, if my mind is not my own, game over. So
I guess that's what we think too. And that, I mean, we've researched everything. We used to just kind of be a catch-all. We would do, you know, everything from daily news topics to vaccine science to, I mean, just any false flags. We talk a lot about that at our channel too. We used to be kind of just a catch-all, but over time you can see the videos that we've started putting out. We've kind of funneled a lot of our energy into this topic because we feel like if we're all walking around in the SpongeBob movie with the bucket helmets on, then none of the other topics really matter, do they? Because you'll be on autopilot, you know? And so that's why we've pretty much centered on this topic, because we feel like you. I mean, this is one of the most if not the most important thing that we face. And we started talking about, like, how do we really get people to understand that in a way that doesn't sound like we're cuckoo over here with tinfoil hats on, just hiding under our couch or whatever.
You guys don't have a cuckoo bone in your body. I mean, that's what I love about it. You know, it's so heartland. You're so from the heartland. And, you know, you live in the heartland, so you live near Austin. But, you know, you have that, you know, you kind of feel like, well, if you took a break, you'd just jump in the Jeep and get a pack of beers and go out, you know, run around the ranch and go fishing or something. Do you know what I mean? There's not a kooky bone in your body is what it sounds like. And I think that's why it's so effective. Aaron's shocked. He's...
I just want to try to know what I'm talking about, and I hope to meet other people who want to know that too. Because I know that I'm not going to save the world by myself, and I don't think we're going to be storming the Capitol tomorrow or winning some physical conflict and a civil war. I don't think that's ever going to end in anything positive for the people who want to restore this country to anything like it's supposed to be, like we'd like
right.
it to be. So I'm just going to start with knowledge is power and try to build up there, I think.
Okay, well, go to... Now, your website is TrueStream TV?
TrueStreamMedia.com.
TrueStreamMedia.com. Can they donate? So they can link to it from there, or they can link to it from the YouTube channel, right?
And we have a page that has everything set up with our Patreon and everything like that. And it's on every single one of our YouTube videos in the description box. We have links to all that. And we put up a mission statement on our website that talks about what we think is important and where we're coming from. And then on the Patreon, we have a whole description of what exactly it is we're trying to do here. But really, in a nutshell, it's just we've been putting together this movie. It's already, I'd say we're at probably, what, 80% finished?
All
we
right.
got over 2 hours of it finished and edited. Yeah, he hates that. He really, and he hates that I'm saying what percent we're, but he really does. He's like, oh, no.
It'll
but
be done when we're finished.
Because the problem is just that, I mean, we had to finally say, okay, look, we're going to have to cut this movie off at a certain year because otherwise this is going to be, you know.
Well, but we're all going to want the sequel, so you can do part two.
That's the saddest part is that there's already a sequel. Actually, once the movie is finished, we also have a book, and it's that's going to go with it. And because there's not only so much you can put in a film, and we want to put a book out that has, you know, the declassified documents and all the citations. I think the index of the book is probably going to be probably the size of the actual book itself too. So the thing is going to be huge, but I want everything to be together in one place so that people can go and maybe they'll start looking into it and find new avenues of research because we're just two people and it's all we can do and we got two kids that we
doesn't seem like that from looking at the content. I have to make a confession because, you know, I was trying to get a hold of you for quite a while and you guys were too busy deep diving on the documentary, but I was feeling very badly about the fact that I wasn't doing more original research and providing more content on mind control for the Solera report. And so I started to research, well, how could I do that? How could I really make it feasible to do that? And of course, we've been doing all these book reviews on, you know, entrainment technology and the application and all these applied thing that affects people in their day-to-day life, particularly the financial side. And so I started to look around and I realized, well, wait a minute. TrueStream's already doing it, and they're doing a much better job than I could ever do. So I'm just going to promote the bejesus out of them.
And yeah, you can put up all of our videos. You could have all of it.
Doing
in fact, when we're finished with this film, we're going to send you a copy, like a screener copy, so that you just have a copy. And we're going to just tell people, you know, buy a copy of this movie and then make copies and give it to everyone. We don't care.
Fabulous.
Like, that's the thing. We don't.
Right.
I want everyone to see it. That's what I want. I want everyone to be able to have that information because that's the thing is not having that information, not having that basic understanding. We're never going to be able to have even just the conversations that society needs to have about this. And so that's why it's been so hard is because we have to – I feel like I've taken all of, I feel like I've almost gotten a neuroscience degree and all the stuff I've had to read for this.
Right.
Some of it's dense scientific, and that's why this stuff is buried in tomes.
It's dense.
No one would ever, they don't
dense.
Even want to read that stuff.
But, you know, I've always liked the sports metaphor. I love that thing in sports, stick with your man, and, you know, you can watch the whole play, you can watch the other guy score, but until you master the person who's in your domain, you can't move on. And that's how I do my research. I know some people follow the money, but when I find someone, you know, the Rockefeller Foundation.
He follows the people.
Look up Rockefeller, get every book on the shelf that they've got. You know, you find a scientist who you know is involved. Follow, you know, read all their boring works. You don't even know what the title's supposed to mean. It will make sense eventually. And I think
that's what's happened.
Other people do that too, because a lot of this, we just found it. Some really boring throwaway material.
But it's once you put it all together, we synthesize it, I guess, and put it all together and make it digestible, I think it's really going to open up the conversation that needs to be had here. You know, I think it's just going to help people to at least catch up to what's actually possible. And that's something we don't have right now. We just don't have that. So
okay, well, you're listening. Go to their website. We'll have the links up at Solari in the commentary. You can link from there. Anything you could do to support Aaron and Melissa and TrueStream Media, I would deeply appreciate it because I think they're trying to make sure that we're all resonating with the divine in each other as opposed to some stranger's machine. And I just think there's nothing more important than this. So I just want to say God bless you both. You're doing great stuff. We're here to help.
Thank you.
When we're ready to promote the documentary, I will promote it. You'll just be embarrassed. So
not after all we've gone through to do. We've driven across the country 3 times for this movie. We drove to Canada for this movie. We drove to Canada from Texas for this movie. I don't care at this point. I just want people to see it.
Well, I assure you, it they will see it. Do you have a name that you can disclose yet, or we have to wait?
Let's wait on that.
I think we'd like to wait.
Yeah, we know
what we're going to call it, but I think we'd like to wait.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Well, Melissa and Aaron, thank you so much for joining us. Any last words you want to give us?
We appreciate all the work you do, too, and I've always been interested in what you have to say, so it's great to talk to you anytime.
And I just want, and thank you for having us on to discuss this. I think that's the first step is at least talking about it. I think a lot of people shy away from even discussing this topic. They're afraid, and they're afraid they're going to be called crazy, and that's part of the stigma they placed on this, but having these conversations, I mean, that's so important. So we really appreciate that you had us on, especially about this. It's such an important topic.
Okay, well, now I can't wait for the documentary.
I think you'll appreciate the amount of work that went into it.
Oh, I know I will. I know I will. Melissa and Aaron, you have a great day, and God bless you.
Oh, thank you.
God bless you, too.